Paul Kritz with you. We're sitting down to speak with Charlotte Svolos, a local teacher, correct?
Yes, I'm a special education teacher at Del Norte High School.
And you're not just that, you're also running for elected office.
I am. I'm running for state assembly for District 2 against Jim Wood.
Now, I'm woefully ignorant. How big is District 2? How far does it go?
It is a significant. It is all of Del Norte County, all of Humboldt County, Trinity, Mendocino, and about half of Sonoma.
Wow. Wow. So in all, okay, let me just do this too. We're also joined in the studio by Jessica Sainar from the Wild Rivers Outpost. But so you were saying before that it's just you and Jim Wood in this race.
That's correct. Jim Wood and I for the primary. And then that because of our top two primaries at the moment, that means both of us will automatically advance to the November general election.
And is there nobody else seeking that seat in all those counties?
At this point, no. And,
wow.
And they, as far as I know, there would have to be an official qualified write-in.
Mm-hmm.
Would be the only other way to approach that at this point. And to become a qualified write-in, you have to turn in the same number of signatures that Jim Wood and I had to do to be official candidates before that deadline.
Oh, wow. That's a steep climb then for any potential candidate. That's interesting. So you've done this before, though. You ran in 2012? Correct?
I did. I ran for state senate against Rod Wright when he was up on 8 felony charges for voter fraud.
I was not here for that.
No, that was actually down in Carson. I moved here from Southern California, so that was not local to this area.
Okay. I was not there for that.
But I am a strong advocate of being an alternative when there are problems that I see.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that begs the question then, why run against Jim Wood this year?
Jim Wood takes our area for granted quite a bit. I feel like he is not a proactive advocate, especially for this area. And if I can do nothing but bring more attention to the issues and make him pay a little more attention to our area, then I've accomplished quite a bit.
Wow, even in losing an election like this, just as long as you put Del Norte on his map, sort of. I have to say, in a lot of interactions with the legislatures, Congressman Huffman, you know, coming through and things like that, I have seen Jared Huffman, I have seen Mike McGuire, I've seen Jim Wood once.
Right. No, and that's exactly part of it, is that I think that he tends to ride the coattails of those who do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have no complaints with, I have a few complaints, but very mild complaints on Huffman and McGuire. Because I really feel like they do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you disagree with them on a certain issue here or there, they actually are advocates for their area.
Right.
Where I don't feel that that's the case with Jim Wood.
Wow.
That's interesting that you say that, though, because the thing that I can think of that Jim Wood has done specifically with Del Norte County in mind, or it may have just come about after a handful of specifically healthcare advocates, as well as the Crescent City Mayor and District 3 Supervisor Chris Howard, brought to the attention the issues involving community benefits at Sutter Coast Hospital. And Assemblyman Wood authored a bill specifically related to that.
Well, that's his area of expertise. And
right.
So I didn't say he did nothing.
Right.
I just, said that he has not done a lot.
Okay.
He is a dentist, and so he does understand the healthcare field. I would say that that's his area of expertise, and it's probably something that he would be in front of. As a matter of fact, there is one other bill that he worked on that I applaud, and that was the pay-to-delay bill that he worked on, where that was companies profiteering off of paying third-party drug companies that to delay putting out an alternative to a drug that costs more.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as healthcare, I can think of at least two areas where he's done things. But in the broader sense, I can't think of a ton of things where he has been an advocate. When it's in his area of expertise, yes.
What sorts of Del Norte specific issues then do you think need to be brought up in a brighter light?
One of them is that Humboldt and Del Norte have the lowest funded special education local plan area.
Mm-hmm.
With a significant population, especially in Del Norte, of a 20% special education ratio.
Mm-hmm. That's a whole other conversation we can have just as a special ed teacher, too.
Absolutely.
As well,
and on Common Core and all those other issues, mm-hmm, where I am an expert.
The door keeps opening. We can move the broom. See, this is the we're in this room. I'll edit all this out. Thank you. So one of the things that needs to be worked on. But yeah, that's so raising funds available because special ed is such a big deal. Mental health services are just
in general.
Big deal in general, yeah.
And that's an area where there is a shortcoming. With him being a health advocate, I would have thought that there would be been more advocacy for health care and mental health specifically. Mm-hmm. I know that there was a movement from some of our local supervisors to actually do things with Sutter Coast and fixing who administered our emergency room and things like that. And
right.
I would think that you would be in the forefront of that if you were an assembly person mm-hmm. representing this area. And it was more local people who got that done.
Yeah.
Well, especially for Northern California, because Sutter Health is centered in Northern California. And, you know, you bring up Del Norte-centric issues, but District 2...
Is all
huge.
Sutter Health.
Yeah.
But it's geographically speaking, it's a huge district.
It is. I've actually driven it significant times. I've been down to multiple town halls in Sonoma, which is 45% of the vote.
Wow. Okay.
So they control 45% of the vote of this whole area, and it's no wonder that somebody would pay more attention to Sonoma when they're
right.
almost half the vote.
So in your traveling through District 2, though, I mean, have you found commonalities between what other smaller rural communities?
I have. They have some business issues in Humboldt where they've had businesses go out of business. They, homelessness transcends all five of those counties. I actually sat on a commission in Torrance on homelessness and Veterans Affairs. I worked in petition office and read legal documents and explained them to common people so that I've read those bills and laws and had to digest them and understand them. So there's... And then I worked loss prevention at Target for a while. So I actually have understanding in law enforcement on a very basic level.
Sure.
You know, not as a law enforcement professional, but, you know, I have lots of experience in lots of areas, including small business, where I've, you know, run little side ventures out of my home and things like that, where I think that broadness will give me an advantage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're originally from Southern California. What brought you up to Del Norte County?
Well, I have family in Cave Junction. Mm-hmm. So that was the primary reason for choosing this exact spot. But my husband was diagnosed with MS approximately 5 years ago. And we had to move somewhere where we could live on my income because he was no longer able to work. And that's one of the benefits that we do have is a low cost of living. And as a special ed teacher, we could live on my income. We took our Southern California equity and bought our home cash. I didn't carry a mortgage because, you know, so we live modestly, but that's only because the house is paid off.
No, I did the same thing from San Francisco. Yes.
But I've fallen in love with this community very much.
Yeah. How long have you been in
almost 5 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So, so much of the dynamic between Sacramento and Del Norte, but Del Norte is, you know, hey, we're here, don't forget us. And we've spoken a lot about that. And of course, the breakdown here in Del Norte County is kind of different too. I'm leading to the point that Anya, I was looking at your Facebook page or looking at stuff online, and you're running as a Republican.
I am.
That automatically puts you in the minority in Sacramento, not so much up here,
yeah.
where you represent about half. I think we're about evenly split in Del Norte County.
Yeah, Del Norte County is an area where I would expect to carry that county mm-hmm. just with that, but I don't take that for granted. I work with CTA and NEA, and I work with a lot of people who are not Republicans, and I have found those commonalities where we can come together on issues that are important, especially education,
mm-hmm.
which should be a nonpartisan issue. Too often it isn't, but...
Right, right. And I think this is one of those instances where coming from a place like Del Norte, we just sort of live that middle ground between left and right. It doesn't seem like, you know, like we're all in the middle.
But and if you look at my candidate statement, I really look at... You know, let's look at the 80% of things that we can all agree on that mm-hmm. are not the fringe issues. Let's settle those, and then maybe we can take on the fringe issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So fringe issues, what are the key issues then in Sacramento statewide then? We've talked about local stuff that you'd like to champion, but if you're sitting in the assembly in Sacramento, what are the big issues that California as a state needs to address then? Or can address maybe from that 80% perspective?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I thought of as I've run both previously and now was, well, how do you take things like, you know, healthcare, where you've got one company who is a religious-based company who doesn't want to cover this or that procedure directly because of religious reasons. Mm-hmm. And you've got the individual who needs those needs met, specifically birth control, which is a much less controversial issue, just as an example. And you can work out something where you have a flexible spending account that is medically based so that you have a third-party administrator that insulates the Christian organization from covering it directly but still gives access to the individual. As a matter of fact, even in a more inclusive and non-discriminatory way, because then a guy could use it for whatever drug he needed to, or you could buy cold medicine for your family.
Or an operation.
Or an operation. Or,
for example, I wanted to get my tubes tied.
Right. And that wouldn't be covered under a standard health care for either, or it might not be for a standard reason, but you could use that flexible spending account, medical account, for anything that you needed it to that was for a medical expense. And it would open a thing that would protect this organization, protect mm-hmm. the rights of the individual, and still preserve the sanctity of both.
I'm trying to understand that. Is this sort of a California, maybe more individually based analog of the marketplace in the ACA, that kind of thing? Is it something that sort of insulates?
Well, it's a middle ground that would protect you from having a discrimination situation where, you know, this group has this belief mm-hmm. that they want to exclude because they're all private. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not county funded, or, you know, that of course brings you into rules where you'd have to follow everything
right.
that the state had as a rule. But then you have this private individual who maybe isn't part of that religion or part of that thing, and it would just create that insulation that would allow the individual to make the individual's choices mm-hmm. without subjecting the religious institution to
that
demand.
And everybody gets to exercise their constitutional rights there and not get into
trouble. And that's just the way you could do that kind of compromise 80%. Like, let's find a solution that works for both sides.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you find yourself in even a smaller minority being willing to compromise these days?
Probably. I think that politicians, I'm probably in a minority, but of people, I don't think I am. You know, when I sit down and we actually talk issues and we get away from the alphabet soup of how we're registered after our name or you don't know that mm-hmm. information, I find that when you're just discussing an issue, that we have more that we agree on than we disagree on.
Yeah, yeah.
And that if we just could set aside that marginality and that fringe attitude that seems to be pervasive, especially on Facebook, actually solve some of these issues if we were just like, you know, how do we fix this thing?
Right, right. As opposed to, you know, how do we bludgeon each other over the heads with our own points of view? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you were explaining before we started the interview how you kind of have a unique situation with this, with the primary and then general election in November, in that you get basically to run kind of a test campaign.
Yeah.
And then follow it up for real moving toward November. So can you explain that again?
Yeah, and so because of a top two primary, when there are only two candidates in a state race or an assembly race or a congressional race, you automatically advance mm-hmm. Because you're going to be one of the top two because you're only two. And so March is kind of a poll, and then you can look at the voting data from all of the counties and how they chose to vote, and like, oh, you know, I put out this message and it just didn't reach this area. I need to go do a town hall there, or I need to go meet those people and find out what's important to them so that I can really speak to that part of the community. Because it's not just, I mean, obviously I want them to pay a little more attention to Humboldt and Del Norte. We're kind of close to each other here, but it's important that they pay attention to Trinity and Mendocino mm-hmm. and, you know, those areas also that are more rural and not Sonoma.
Right. So my question is, about a week ago, I went to the elections office, flipped through the campaign finance filings and everything else, and I didn't see one for you. And so I asked Elisa about that, and she said that, that if you don't, you know, if you don't plan on taking in more than $2,000, and then spending $2,000, you don't have to file campaign finances. And this is just for the March election. Are you going to be kind of stepping up, seeking donations and spending?
Yeah, between March and November.
Yeah,
that was the idea.
Okay.
As I'll have more chance over the summer because I'm a teacher to go travel and ask for those donations where I haven't had that opportunity in the limited time from when we had to file to
March. Yeah.
Wow. It seems like that's a remarkable opportunity to have. It's let's run this. It's like it's like marketing. You know, let's run this campaign. Let's see where it didn't work. Exactly, and then tweak it. That's great. I think every situation in life should come like that. What did you learn from the earlier run in Southern California that you've taken into this?
I learned how to really talk about what I believe in a way that and defend it. You know, really, I had a city council run also where I got to be in forums and debate. Mm-hmm. And I think that really polishes your ability to answer questions and think critically about the questions that you're given. Because I don't just like use that opportunity to turn it around and talk about what I want to talk about, which you see a lot of politicians do. Yeah. I go, give me a moment to think about that. And then I actually think about it. And then I try to make sure that I answer that question.
Wow, right there in real time?
Right there in real time. Well, there's a little bit of an advantage I have. When I was in college, I was on a speech and debate impromptu. Uh-huh. And they literally give you a topic. They give you 1 minute to think about what you want to say. And then you have to talk about for about 5 minutes, beginning, middle, and end. Go.
Wow.
So you really have to know a lot about a lot of things.
Right.
If you don't know in depth about that issue.
And then on top, arrange it in a cogent fashion.
Right? And arrange it in a cogent fashion that still makes you sound intelligent.
That's fun. That sounds like, that's
cool. I could do that.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And it was a good opportunity to help me grow and frame my ideas and be able to not be afraid. I've actually spoken in front of 9,000 people at the NEA.
Wow. 9,000
on a jumbotron.
Whoa!
What's
would you
the
talk
NEA
about
again?
National Education Association.
You speak in.
I was on the resolutions committee, and specifically, they were debating whether or not to remove the words "common sense" from common sense gun control.
Oh wow! Okay.
And it was because common sense gun control is actually a very definable issue, where it talks about keeping weapons out of the hands of criminals and people with mental illness and, you know, controlling things that even the NRA like 90% agrees with,
right?
To the point where gun control without those words would literally mean too much or too little.
Right?
Right? Yeah, so those words were very important to be in the policy statement of the NEA because they had a definable characteristic.
Did you win?
I did.
Good. Excuse me. I'll edit that out too. So, I mean, do you enjoy campaigning?
I do. I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy hearing about issues and really connecting with just general people. I could find a total stranger in a parking lot and probably talk for 2 hours.
That comes in. That's handy. That's good.
So, I was interested in, you mentioned concerns of Del Norte County and Humboldt County. But you're also going to represent, if you're elected, half of Sonoma County.
Right.
So are there, I feel like maybe Paul asked this already, but are you finding commonalities between those two areas?
I sort of asked that, but not between like the half of Sonoma, the 45,000. Yeah. I was talking about smaller places. So good question.
Yeah, no, that is a good question. Really, Sonoma isn't that much different than where I lived in Torrance. And so I feel like I already have a connection to that more suburban, slightly more condensed neighborhood because I came from that. I was on a commission there. Right. I know what that looks like and feels like. And you still do have to represent those people. No, you're absolutely right because it is all five counties.
Yeah, because I mean, we always say we're being alienated by Sacramento and stuff, and I would think that as a candidate, it would be beneficial to remember that the reverse could also be true.
Yeah, I've actually done 3 town halls in Sonoma specifically because that is a major part of the area. And I've done call-ins to Mendocino and Trinity. I haven't been able to be there in person yet.
Yeah.
And then I went to Humboldt for a couple of events. So I really have tried to travel, even in the time that I've had. I've done more in person than like sending out mailers or that impersonal stuff because I feel like it's important for me to get to actually talk with these people and know what they want and need before I go putting out literature that says this is what I'm going to do for you.
That's interesting. And this takes me to my favorite question. which is, do you run to represent your constituency, or do you run because you have an agenda and a vision that perhaps you've shared with your constituency, and they go, yes, go do that?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
You have to come in with ideas. Mm-hmm. That is a key part of wanting to campaign. If you don't have something that you strongly believe in and you want to see happen, specifically my expertise, like I said, is in education and in making sure that we find a way to do that funding. One of the things I've pointed out at every speaking engagement I've done is that there's not a single school district in California where special education budget does not encroach on the general fund.
Mm. Wow, okay.
So if you fully funded special education, you would be giving a raise to every district in the state.
Oh, wow.
Because they would be able to use that general fund money where it belongs.
Absolutely.
Right. Do you have dollars? Do you have figures for what fully funding special ed in California would look like?
I don't. I know in our area, it encroaches over...
$6 million, I think, is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that if you just take that our little, wow, you know, county, and then you multiply that for Mendocino and Trinity.
Right.
You know, and Humboldt and
Sonoma. And SELPA is in Humboldt County, so...
Our SELPA's in Humboldt County. We do occasionally see Mindy Faddick up here from... And she's advocated with the state to increase our funding and get rid of that old formula.
Right.
So she has attempted to do that, but nobody has taken on or championed that bill.
Right. Wow. It seems like now's a good time to run with education in your thinking, and, you know, in your right out front, because... There's money available at the state level to actually address some of these things.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you ignore local issues. Like, I didn't realize that winery and erosion and things like that were an issue in Sonoma. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I went down there and found that out, and I'm like, oh, now I could be an advocate for that being a concern. You know, you have wineries that want to make money, but when you have the land being completely depleted and all the nutrients taken from it, and mm-hmm. then the area is abandoned, that's not good for the county as a whole.
Right, right, right. So what other issues then statewide that, you mentioned homelessness, and we've been talking with Board of Supervisors candidates for a month now, and that's a huge deal here. It's even bigger elsewhere. So in Sacramento, with your time, what sort of things do you think the state can do to address that? I mean, we have, what, a quarter of the nation's homeless population in California is what
we
I
do. Significantly, I think that one of the biggest contributors to homelessness rise was a lack of mental health mm-hmm. and drug programs. Mm-hmm. If we brought those back and we funded those, I think you would see a significant decline in homelessness in and of itself. Because that's where you get your service-resistant homeless. Not now that you end up with people who are in economic circumstances who end up homeless, but they tend to not be service-resistant. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who reach out to the programs that we have in existence. They're the ones who go to the shelters. They're the ones who seek out the help from either public services or private churches, and they're going to want to get back on their feet and stop living out in the cold. Mm-hmm, you know, it's the service resistant, which are tend to be funded by drug abuse, alcohol abuse, and mental health issues. If you get them medication, you get them those mental health services, and you have alcohol and drug programs. Even though I know the emphasis with the state is housing first, it seems like you need to do that hand in glove.
Right. I hope you don't take this wrong. You don't sound like a Republican. I mean, because you're talking about education, you're talking about mental health, and it's coming down to, it seems like, spending more. The state should spend more and fully fund these things. And
but you do need to see, and I'll bring that back to those roots, is that you need to audit those programs. You need to make sure that those dollars are spent wisely. You need to not make sure you don't have bloated programs, mm-hmm. because if you're going to spend on... Republicans aren't anti-tax. We're anti-tax for no reason.
Okay.
Right? You don't want to see things like cap and trade where they're taxing based on pollution, but it's not going to actually fix the environment. It's going to get dumped into the general fund and be spent on programs that might or might not be useful.
And you might even argue then that the state would have a vested interest in the continuation of pollution because it's going to be pumping up the general fund.
Precisely. Okay. Right. Precisely. Wow. So that's where I get into. It's not that you are anti-spending money on things that are important. Mm-hmm. We know we need police. We know we need fire department. No Republican is ever going to say, oh, we don't want those things.
Right.
So it's not anti-Republican to want to spend money on the right things and the right programs. You just want to make sure that that money is spent wisely. And generally speaking, we believe that the government is probably not the best vehicle to do that.
Well, yeah, yeah, but and that but the, I come back with the with it might not be the best vehicle now currently to do it. It's the only vehicle with the capability to do it. And what it needs is, if it's not the best vehicle, then fix it.
Right. No, no, exactly. And if there's another solution, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not saying that that's never the vehicle to fix
it. Right.
Obviously, public education is something I believe in strongly. That's something that's run by the government.
Right.
You know. There's things that have to be run by the government. I get that. But when there's private enterprise along the lines of, we're having a weird thing with our homeless shelter right now that gets into those lines, mm-hmm. actually, because it couldn't be a private organization and get state funding.
Right.
Right? So it has to be a 501(c). It can't be a charitable activity, and then it doesn't count for the laws they passed about having a shelter. Mm-hmm. If it's opened by a religious institution, it doesn't count as far mm-hmm. as the state's rules.
Sure.
And so in order to meet the state's rules to enforce the trespassing laws, it has to be state run. So that's kind of a weird rule that kind of goes into that category.
Well, what's happened here, though, is
it's
that
not
Daphne.
State run.
No, but Daphne, they set up a whole other 503C separate from the original one,
right.
Mission Possible,
that's
sort of get around all of it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, to get around that. But you're absolutely right. That's the kind of thing where regulations say stay in your lanes, even if those lanes become ridiculous down the road.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So if you had a charity. Shelter that was run by a church, that would not count
right.
for that state rule.
Right.
But in Del Norte County, we have something, we have over, 180 nonprofits in the county. Many of them receive state and federal funding to run. So we take in more state and federal dollars than we contribute by attempting to fix that vehicle. Would that change that dynamic? And would it change that dynamic for the better?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. But I was specifically referring to that rule that's,
right.
as far as enforcing no trespassing.
Right.
I don't have a problem with a religious institution also accepting funds. It just means that they have to accept the state's regulations
sure.
also.
Mm-hmm.
It just was that specific rule about you can't tell somebody in a public park to move along unless you have a facility with a certain number
that
of beds in it
to.
That they can go to.
Right.
And that facility has to be state run.
That's the part I don't know.
Or it has to be, it can't be
can't,
a private,
it has to be secular.
It has to be public. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it has to be this public entity.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be a private church run facility.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So like if St. Paul's was operating, you know,
well,
they're
even,
like, come and spend the night here.
Even Mike Justice has talked about that. Is that he felt like for years he couldn't get the, he didn't have any traction in Del Norte County because it is our
a
daily
church.
Bread was a religious entity.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Huh.
So do you feel, I mean, that's sort of, I mean, being a Republican as you are and sort of accepting, you know, the role of government if it's done responsibly, is that another example of that compromise?
Yeah.
I mean, because you're basically, I mean, it's, I don't want to put words in your mouth or like
no,
it.
No, I don't think you are.
It's almost like you're a tax and spend responsibly Republican. Is that a fair likeness?
That's a fair likeness.
Wow. That's interesting. That's neat. I've been waiting for the.
Are there different Republicans? Because
you got small. You've got. There are big government Republicans and small government Republicans and no government Republicans and all of that. Of course, no taxes, no matter what. That kind of stuff. And you know,
and there's people. It's a big tent.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is.
Just like the Democrats is.
Yeah.
Big
exactly.
Tent.
That's
yeah.
Fine. Nothing gets done. I'm editorializing. So, what's next for you in your campaign? We've been speaking for about a half an hour now, and I want to work towards wrapping it up. What do you have?
I'm going to look at the poll data mm-hmm. as soon as that comes out and figure out where I need to concentrate my efforts. I'm working on what I would want to do for some of my fundraisers this summer so that I can file that and actually get some mailers out and stuff for the November election
mm-hmm.
To get more of that message out. Right now, I've been using mostly social media, which is inexpensive. I bought signs, but I'm still under that $2,000 limit.
Oh, good for you.
out of curiosity, do you know of any other candidate in Del Norte County that has run for assembly or state senate or Congress even.
Yeah, no, we haven't had a local candidate as long as Alyssa can remember.
Okay.
Wow.
Which is a fairly significant amount of time.
That's the person to ask. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, way to go.
No, that's really cool. And so you'll be walking, what are you doing on election night?
I'm going to be at the Republican Central Committee probably doing their watch party.
Okay, so that's one of the places. Yeah. We're lining up our election night, like where to go and hit and go find it. Yeah.
So I also wanted to bring up, and this probably doesn't have anything to do with your campaign, but you're a teacher.
I am.
Contract negotiations continue.
They do.
And it'll be a year next Friday.
It will be a year next Friday.
Wow.
What are your thoughts on that, and how does that affect your campaign?
I think it's been a little bit of a distraction going into the March election. I feel very fortunate because it's only a top two race that I haven't had to have that distraction because I am the treasurer for Del Norte Teachers Association. So I do have that role, and it's been a significant time commitment. I feel like finally there's some movement. I don't know if that's related to the recall effort. I've finally seen some movement, but there's still this clause where they want to make sure that as we're entering into a three-year contract, that we don't have any language that has economic impact. And that could mean class size, that could mean all kinds of things that would be bargaining for the common good, which would be our actual students.
Right.
They would literally be tying our hands into that three-year negotiation.
Which is kind of what happened with the current contract is the district had to impose in order for you guys to say, okay, we're striking.
There's actually an interesting legal line there. That is true only until August 31st, 2020,
correct,
when the three-year contract expires. There are multiple things that there are many things in a contract that continue in a labor
negotiation.
Yeah. But there are three things that do not continue once the contract is expired. And one of those is no strike clauses.
Wow. Okay.
The other is that the district doesn't have to collect our dues and things like that. You know, there's a couple of other clauses that aren't as good for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But one of those is that no strike clause as of August 31st, 2020 goes away.
And then you can take...
Well, and it would depend on two things. It would depend on whether we've settled 1920.
Sure.
If 1920 is settled because the law has other legal challenges and questions, and that says that if we've settled 1920, we would have to wait until the 2021 reached impasse and fact-finding just like this one did.
Oh, so you'd have to start the process pretty much all over
again. If we settle 1920, yes.
Jeez.
Wow.
Fine.
I know my law.
You know, that's cool. That's awesome.
Being educated is something that is important, and I do kind of bring that Torrance big city understanding of union.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like you were saying, it kind of, I'm not your typical Republican because I'm a union thug Republican.
You're a union thug Republican.
You're an LA Republican.
Is it a geographical difference like that? Is that an LA Republican thing?
No, not necessarily, because I think there's a lot of myths and misconceptions about Republicans that exist. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of name calling on both sides. I mean, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I think there's, when I've had literally, I championed a clause in our state platform. I didn't write it, but I spoke about it at our convention.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally adding words that says, you know, we're against violence, we're against discrimination, we're against these horrible things. And I showed it to some of my Democrat teacher friends, and they're like, oh, Republicans don't believe that.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, I don't know. I was in a room with 3,000 other people who voted for that.
Wow.
So I'm kind of thinking you might not be correct about
it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, but I can also, I mean, have you had to do that often in California?
I have, early and often. Yeah. And I think that's the other piece of having a special education teacher run as a Republican,
mm-hmm,
is they go, Huh.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe they ask that questions and they go, well, maybe Republicans aren't what I thought they were.
Right, right.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic, too, because here you have Assemblyman Wood, who's a dentist. He's worked in the healthcare industry that's hugely corporate and big pharma and all that, even though I guess forensic dentistry is like a hobby of his. Yeah. Forensic dentistry. I am not kidding.
Okay, we don't need to get into that.
Anyway, but he's a dentist and everything. You're coming at this from, you're a special education teacher. You work for a government entity. And so I think it's, and you're running as a Republican. I think that's a really cool dynamic.
Are you saying like Jim's kind of like the opposite number of that then? Yeah, 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 but yeah, that's interesting. Wow. Well, leave it to Del Norte to throw to throw a candidate up like that that breaks the norms. Let's just, by way of wrapping up, is there anything that we didn't ask that you'd like to be sure that gets said?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I show up in a lot of unconventional places. I was at the Women's March, you know, and I had a lot of people even on the Republican side that were like, you went to the Women's March? Like, we were there as a group 2 years ago.
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so it's we don't have to agree on 100% of things in order to have common language about the things we do agree on. And I think that's probably the centerpiece of my campaign.
Wow, wow. That's enlightening, and thank you so very much. Thanks for coming in and talking with us today, Charlotte.
You bet.
Thank you.
Anything else? Anything else? You got anything?
No, I'm good.
Okay, all right.
Thanks.
Charlotte Svolos, running for Assembly, California State Assembly, District 2. So she gets a kind of a do-over, because we'll do the primary, and then in the general election. You've got a busy year ahead.
I do.
Well, thank you for spending just a little bit of this afternoon with us today, Charlotte.
You bet. Right.
Thank you.